There's so many considerations. What does the child want to be when they grow up? What is their potential salary? What does that return on investment look like? Maybe this school that does cost a little more money is the only school that has that specific program that will allow the child to meet their future career goals, make that salary that they're looking to. So yeah, it's taking all of the different pieces and putting it together and helping those parents and the child be able to move forward successfully.
Welcome to the Thriving in Chaos Project. Certified divorce coach and credentialed mediator Paulette Rigo invites you to grab a favorite beverage, find a cozy seat, soothe your soul, and take a listen. This podcast was created and inspired by our courageous journeys, love for connecting with others, and having meaningful conversations that teach, impact, and heal through sharing our stories. In each episode, Paulette will be joined by some of the most experienced and compelling experts in all things divorce and transformation. Listen to prepare and thrive through the toughest chapters as we reveal our hardships, celebrate our lessons learned, and see the future clearly with encouragement, hope, and joy. Leave feeling empowered and prepared to approach life and maintain our dignity no matter what. Each podcast episode focuses on sharing real conversations from real life situations. Isn't it time you thrived? Welcome to the Thriving in Chaos Project. I'm Paulette, your host, and today I'm thrilled to have Vicki Vollweiler, the founder of College Financial Prep. Such a needed conversation today in these days with college and kids and what's going on. She works with many separated and divorced parents and families nationally, which is great. She doesn't just work regionally, but nationally, everyone, to help them maximize their savings, minimize college costs, and reduce the need for student loan debt. Oh, what a much needed conversation. Welcome to the podcast, Vicki. I'm so glad you're here.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Well, let's start at the beginning. How does a nice woman like you get mixed up with this business where you are holding the hands of divorcing couples? And I know what that's like as a mediator and a divorce coach, but on your end, like, how did you really get into this niche of your expertise with savings, college costs, student loans, and the college process? Do tell.
So let me say that I have my MBA from Syracuse University, full free scholarship plus stipend. So that's the beginning of it. Anyway, I went on, had a career, was a VP of client services and operations, and I focused mostly on the analytics, the return on investment, the negotiations between clients and vendors, you know, so I was always looking at the economics and the bottom lines. Eventually I became divorced, and I decided to totally switch gears and become a divorce coach because the process, as we know, is so hard, so awful. There are better ways. There are ways to think strategically to help clients through. Anyway, I was focusing specifically on the financial side, helping people with their personal finances. And eventually people started to say, now, how am I going to afford to send my kids to college? And really at the time, you know, I had younger kids and thought, wow, you know, this is something that, you know, not only am I concerned about, but everybody else is concerned about as well. And I saw the need, it wasn't already out there. I saw the need for people to think strategically. How are they going to be able to save the most money? How are they going to be able to reduce debt? How are they going to be able to move forward, say, if another parent wasn't cooperating with them? How are they going to move forward if the kids are younger? And what about their separation agreements and divorce agreements? What needs to be included? How are they going to move forward when all of a sudden there's this separation or divorce and a huge financial change in the household and the child's already in college? So there were just all of these concerns that needed to be addressed. And that's when College Financial Prep was founded.
Love it.
Well, you took your genius zone, and of course, how impressive, and I'm not, you know, patting you on the back. This is just a fact, Jack. The fact that you got a full free ride plus a stipend to Syracuse University for your MBA. Like, I didn't even know that existed. I was the fortunate one whose parents could afford college, didn't want to go to college, but my father, being the intellectual that he was, said, you're going. And I didn't really know about this world. I was one of those sheltered kids. I knew that, you know, financial aid existed. And do remember the day in high school where they had a meeting where parents could come to the school. And I remember like signing up for it, thinking that everyone was supposed to go. And my parents weren't loaded by any means, like, don't get me wrong. But, you know, there was that border where you could apply, or you were, you know, applicable for it, or you weren't, you didn't meet the requirements. So I remember thinking, oh, like, not everybody can get financial aid. Like, you know, like, it just, it was not in my wheelhouse. And
I have so many thoughts about that.
Say that again.
I have so many thoughts about that to share with you.
Well, let's go down that road, but let me just, you know, finish my thought is, so you were able to take that, your own personal college experience, and then the divorce experience, and see, aha, like, so kudos to you for putting those two together, because so many women do lose child support and alimony, and they don't have a plan B, and they don't have a viable, sustainable way of supporting themselves. And I always tell them, take your life experience and your genius zone and what you're good at, and marry the two, and let's create a business. And you didn't need me, but you did it yourself. And love, love, love.
Thank
it.
You. So
yeah, no, but it's something that needs to be commended, because let's say you went through a divorce. I went through a divorce. Who doesn't nowadays? Like, it's almost more the norm. And that does not make me proud or happy to say that, right, Vicky? Like, we don't have a special badge or like a little ID in our wallet.
I've always said, I am not pro divorce. I mean, unfortunately, I don't know if I should be comparing it to like this, but like an illness. I mean, doctors aren't pro illness, but they're there to help people through it. And that's what we do.
Exactly. We're here to help people manage it so that they can get through it and maintain their dignity, secure their finances, their future, and also save a lot of heartache and relationships during this very trying time. So with that said, let's answer your question. What are your thoughts on that awakening that the 15, 16 year old me had back then of like the world of financial aid? Like, what are the parameters now, and how does it differ? I'd love to hear your point of view on that topic.
Well, a lot of people, regardless whether divorced or married or whatnot, think, oh no, you know, I earn too much money, I have too much assets, I'm not going to bother to apply for financial aid. I'll always advise people, yes, please apply. And there are a couple of reasons for that. One, not 100% of the colleges, but many of the schools will only offer merit scholarships to people that fill out the financial aid applications. So really, even if, and I'm making this up, even if the merit scholarship is $1,000 a year, I'm making this up, why not get the $1,000 a year? I mean, it's, you know, definitely submit a financial aid application. Right, exactly. Other reasons. Say you would qualify for need-based aid, definitely fill it out. Say your child wants to apply for a work-study program. That also has to be done through filing the financial aid applications through FAFSA. That's the federal application. Also, right now, if your family needs to take a student loan, the lowest cost student loan comes from the government, and you have to complete the FAFSA form. There are going to be some things that change. I don't know if anybody's heard of the FAFSA Simplification Act. It's going to start 2020.
But tell us what it is. What does it stand for? What is it?
So the FAFSA Simplification Act, and this could be a whole conversation in and of itself, it's going to be affecting students in the 2023-2024 academic year. It was rolled into one of the coronavirus packages. The government just passed it. So it's going to be affecting students in 2023-2024. So if you have a student who's going to be in college 2023-2024 and forward, this will affect you. So that's going to be, for those students, it's going to look at tax returns from 2021 that are going to be filed in 2022, October 2022 for the 2023 academic year. Anyway, that all said, there are going to be some changes that are coming. The good news is that for people that are need-based, it will be easier to acquire Pell Grants and like that need-based aid. For people who are going through a divorce, it may make things a little harder. There isn't enough guidance yet to exactly say what's going to be happening. They're going to look at the parent now they consider the parent who provides, typically the custodial parent, you know, where they have more residential custody. Typically that's the parent that completes FAFSA right now today. With this FAFSA Simplification Act, they're going to be looking at the parent who provides more financial support. Now, that can be, you know, it can be tricky. So I'm actually working right now with a tax professional and a lawyer, and I want to make sure that, you know, our clients are best served, you know, in planning for it and also, you know, moving forward down the line. But, you know, again, there were a lot of open questions because it is still far away in terms of guidance. So, you know, I'll definitely be on top of that. So definitely, you know, look out in the future for more info from me on it.
Well, the fact that it's a work in progress and that you're so up on it, and I'm sure it's pretty darn new, makes me, you know, just even more impressed with your knowledge. So I couldn't be more excited to dig into this conversation. Now we have, no, and I mean that, you know, I mean, college is, when you have children and you go through divorce and they're in middle school, high school, all of a sudden the conversation, you know, whether you like it or not, is, you know, crushes they have, you know, teams they get on, and then college, right? So are you going to go? Where are you going to go? How are you going to go? How are we going to pay for it? Like, you know, are you going to stay close to home? Are you going to go, you know, far away? You know, all those, there's so many things to consider. And that book, I don't know if they even print it anymore. Of course, I'm sure it's all digital, but there's that big book of every single university in the United States. It's something like 3,000 pages, right? It's absolutely insane, right? Do they still print that book, Vicki?
Yeah, I haven't even, I don't even know. Everything is digital.
It's all digital, but it still exists. Like there is a catalog or a list of every college, and it's A to Z, and it's perhaps one of the most overwhelming, combination of universities, different types of schools. So now I know there's a lot of assessments now where you can sit down at a computer with a guidance counselor on your own or with your parents and put in your interests, your academic scores, your desire for climate, and all of a sudden, you know, it'll give you top 10 schools to consider and all that. Do you put any clout in any of those?
Do I put in what?
Any clout? Is there any validity to those?
There is, but here's my concern. When you're doing that, it doesn't necessarily look at the financial picture for you. Mm-hmm. So yes, you can go in and search and say, wow, here are 10 great schools. But if you're applying to 10 great schools that are not going to give you any need-based aid and not going to give you any merit scholarships, they may not be the best fit. So while you may be familiar with the terms, you know, finding a reach school, finding a, you know, a target school and a safety school, also need to consider financial safety schools. So a lot of work that I do with clients, typically say sophomore and junior year of high school, is we'll consider the schools on their list and then take their personal finances, you know, their situation, and also the academic accomplishments of the child. So that way we can assess how much need-based aid and merit scholarship money they're likely to receive from each school and what that bottom line is likely to look like from each school. So the family knows whether it makes sense to apply or not. You know, part of what I always encourage, you know, and it's like the dreaded C word in divorce, you know, communication. So now not only, you know, is it ideal to communicate with, you know, a former spouse about college and, you know, the children going to college, but also I really encourage parents to communicate with the kids. I think it's totally appropriate to have an upfront conversation with the kids, you know, as they're approaching the college years. And, you know, this is the amount we have saved up. This is the amount we can afford. This is what our hopes and goals are for you as you go on to college. And, you know, ideally, I want them to work together to achieve the goal.
Vicki, do you think that enough parents have the, I don't know, insight to have that conversation with their kids?
Enough parents have the insight. I encourage it. I don't know if people have the,
well,
you know.
It doesn't appear that it's an automatic.
No, it's definitely not. You know, a lot of parents are very uncomfortable talking about finances with their kids. Mm-hmm. But I think it certainly helps because, as I was saying, you know, I'm making this up. You know, a child could have their heart set on, you know, one of the Big Ten rah-rah schools or something, and there's going to be no, you know, potentially no discount whatsoever. The family, and they may just not be able to afford it. You know, but if the child has an understanding up front, what's doable, what's not doable, what's expected of the child, you know, then maybe they can, you know, together work towards common goals, not cause any resentment, not, you know, just, as I said, communication is key.
Yeah, it seems that that's where a lot of this comes from initially, where the conflict comes from. The kid has one expectations, the parent has another expectations, and the pocketbook has yet a third expectation. And sometimes there's not the congruency needed for, and the grades too. So there might be four different conversations. They have to have the grades, the money, the desires, and the communication. And I don't remember ever having a conversation growing up myself about that. I just kind of said, this is where I want to go, and did the applications by myself and luckily got in and they could afford it and off I went. But I also ran a performing arts studio with my mom for 20 years. And part of the process that I was lucky or unlucky, I don't know, it was a big thing I had to do was write recommendations, because I had known these young girls from the age of 3, most of them, you know, in their formative years until they graduated from high school up until 18. And of course I was a natural person to write a recommendation for. And I knew them in a very deep level because I got to know them personally. I got to know them, their work ethic, but I didn't really know them academically, you know? So it was they were looking for different types of referrals and testimonials, if you will. But here's the kicker. I would have the conversation with the teenager, the 16, 17, 18 year old, and they wanted A and the parents wanted B. And they would always say to me, don't tell my parents, don't tell my parents, they'll kill me, you know? And it was like, well, it was either I really don't want to go, but they're forcing me, or, you know, or it was a very hard conversation. So here you mentioned how difficult it is for parents to have a conversation about money and finances and the budget, but also it's hard for the kids to have a conversation about what they really want if it's not in alignment with what the parents' vision is. So this is sometimes where those young adult years can really cause so much conflict. And then you throw divorce on the top of that. Well, okay. I think you've got a bonfire of conflict. And that's why someone like you that can come in and bring those conversations together to really bring the right container for a safe conversation and a practical application of that knowledge, so that you can move through the process wisely and make better decisions about the school, the finances, the kids' dreams and hopes, and the parents, you know, even though it is, they're living vicariously through their children's hopes, wishes, and dreams, which is, you know, I think all parents do that to some degree, some more than others, but, you know, at some point that conversation has to be had. It's got to be a challenging conversation.
Yes. And one of the reasons that I do what I do, I mean, not only are people going through the financial stress and how are we all going to pay for it, you know, and I certainly work to alleviate those concerns and, you know, show people the numbers and, you know, so that way, you know, parents are able to make educated decisions as they move forward in the process. But also, you know, as a divorced mom myself, I get it. There's a ton of emotional stress. You know, our babies are growing up. They're going off to college. We only want to do what's best for them. We're, you know, we're upset because they're growing up. We're thrilled that they're growing up. We're, you know, it's a whole ball of wax. And then you throw a divorce in the middle of it. And, you know, there's so many concerns and stressors You know, the good, the bad, and then the financial. And, you know, so that's my goal. I'm never going to say, no, this is the cheapest college. This is where your child should go. I will never, ever do that. Because really, there's so many considerations. What does the child want to be when they grow up? What is their, you know, potential salary? What does that return on investment look like? You know, maybe this school that does cost a little more money is the only school that has that specific program that will allow the child to meet their future, you know, career goals, you know, and make that salary that they're looking to. So yeah, it's taking all of the different pieces and putting it together and helping those parents, you know, and the child's be able to move forward successfully.
And it's all about that, the successful result. That's why we want our kids to go to school, so that they can, you know, fruitful and more successful in their hopes and dreams. But shifting the conversation back to the finances, because that's really what this is about. But as you can see, the emotional aspect is almost as complicated as the financial one. But how does the financial aid process, the actual process itself, differ for separated and divorced parents from, say, married parents?
Starting early on, so let me say this, you know, we started to talk about the financial aid application, you know, the form itself a little bit. That's just one small piece in the process. A lot of people think that that financial aid form is the be all end all. It's not. So definitely early on when I'm working with families, you know, and again, say end of 10th grade, 11th grade, selecting schools, there is a way to be strategic to consider, say, only schools that will look at the income of one parent as opposed to both parents, because some schools do look at both parents. You know, I may recommend not looking, depending on the situation with the other parent. Or maybe the other parent's situation is as such that, yeah, let's include the other parent because maybe they have very little income. You know, it depends on the situation of each family. But also, say, where are they in divorce or the separation? You know, I may recommend one thing if they've been divorced for 10 years versus something else if it's very new, because the tax returns that we use for financial aid are typically almost a couple of years old. So what's gone on in that household in the past couple of years? And that may also impact how I recommend us moving forward to maximize the savings. You know, the complete goal is to reduce the need for student loan debt. And even if, you know, a family has the money, okay, let's reduce the amount that you're still going to pay. Save the money if the kid wants to go to grad school. Save it for another child. Save it for, you know, I'm sure you understand what I'm saying. You know, if there's a way to reduce the costs on college, let's do it. You know, usually the savings that my clients have received is so far greater than, you know, what my services are. You know, literally, I had one family, and this was because they had three children. I mean, one was, you know, going into a senior year of college, one was going into junior year, and then they had a rising freshman. And I mean, literally, the family saved $50,000 for the 1 year. Again, you know, it was beautiful. You know, the mom was a custodial parent, the dad, you know, was ultimately paying for most of it. But yeah, together they saved $50,000. So that was wonderful.
Well, the more you can save, the better. And I love that you can save money. So it's getting so incredibly expensive that most people don't have an option but to save.
Yeah, I mean, some schools now are, you know, $80,000. I mean, crazy.
I know, it's insane. Well, no,
the 8,000 is per year.
I know. Yeah. No, back in the days when it was my father, it was $12,000 a year to go to Northeastern University. So I went for 5 years because it's a 5-year school for 60 grand, you know, wow. and that, you know, was about 1982. So it was a long time ago, but it seemed like a lot of money, but this seems like a lot more money. So it's,
yes.
Yeah, it's crazy. And if you have more than one, you know, of course, it was just me. My sisters were much older and had already gone through those years of going or not going. But now going back to the situation where we have this FAFSA?
How do you pronounce it? FAFSA. Well, F-A-F-S-A. It's the Free Application for Federal Student Aid.
Got it. now that we have this, you know, form that we have to fill out, and people have, even though they realize I may or may not, you say everyone should fill it out. Is that pretty much your guideline?
Yes.
Okay.
Just because of the potential for the merit scholarships. That's the main reason. Mm-hmm. You know, again, not every school will base their merit scholarships on the submission of FAFSA, but many do. You know, also another reason that I recommend everybody submitting it, it's almost like an insurance product. You know, heaven forbid, I don't know, a parent, you know, gets hit by a bus tomorrow. You know, something horrific happens. With the form on file, then it's possible to ask the school to, you know, reconsider based on what's happening now and, you know, and possibly adjust what you would owe to the school. But it needs to be on file to even ask for that reconsideration. You know, so say a family gets separated, or, you know, it's good to have it on file.
Perfect. Okay. So check. I'm with you. Now, if parents already have children in college, like, is it too late? Is there anything they can do to take advantage of these skills and knowledge?
Yes, I do a lot of work with families that already have kids in college. So anybody who's, say, recently separated or divorced, or especially this year with, you know, COVID and whatnot, so many people have lost jobs. You know, there have been medical expenses. There have been all of these out of the ordinary things that have been happening financially to their families. It's possible to go to the school and to, you know, for potential adjustments to be made. You know, I liken it to, you know, I almost act, and I'm not an attorney, but it's similar in that I'm building a case. So this is something that I regularly do. I build cases to help the family get more money.
Mm. And I assume that would also be applicable for grad school?
Grad school is a little different. Depending on what the child is studying, depends on if the child is considered independent or dependent on the parents. Mm-hmm. You know, so it depends, you know, if it's medical school, if it's law school, definitely the parents are still involved with finances and whatnot. But other things, you know, I don't know, a master's in some other subject, you know, the child may be considered independent.
Exactly. Well, you know, grad school isn't just applicable to the, you can get a, as you know, you know, a master's and pretty much anything now. So,
yes,
you know, we don't want to just limit it to the medical law profession, right? So there's so many different.
No, but I'm saying it was limited to medical and law for, to fill out the FAFSA form.
Gotcha.
The FAFSA form, they're looking for the parents' information, the finances too. So the schools will consider the parents' finances just because.
I understand. Yeah. It is so complicated. Thank God we have you. Now, I'm not joking. Like, it's a very complicated process and you really need to know your stuff. Now, is it as important as traditionally thought, sports, charitable work, musical attributions and, you know, other extracurricular activities or skills or talents or community outreach? Is it just based on grades and test scores and finances, or are those other kind of, shall we say, skirted, superfluous cut? Do they still matter, or are they not really as important as they used to be or thought?
No, they're definitely important. You know, I'm not a traditional college advisor. You know, I don't help with the application process. You know, I do focus on the finances. However, what I will say about this is that all of that other stuff, you know, especially depending on the type of school, could certainly help with merit awards. You know, for instance, here's a funny story. My daughter's young. She's only in sixth grade. She plays the French horn. No, I did not steer her towards the French horn. She did this on her own, but several different music teachers, and they don't even know what I do for a living, have asked her, did your parents tell you to play that instrument because you'll get a scholarship in college? No, that's not the reason that she plays that instrument. But But because there are so few French horn players, yes, that could be a benefit. That just happened to work out in my favor. Student athletes, as I said, maybe band, dance, kids that want to major in, a program that the school is beginning to offer, have that type of interest. Maybe if the child likes to travel and is willing to go to a school in a completely different area of the country, like all of that can make an impact on merit scholarships. Right. There are some schools, and I'm going to say mostly, say the larger state universities that don't have the bandwidth and may use more of just like the grades and the test scores, easy things to award scholarships, because they don't have the bandwidth to go through everybody's, deep dive into every single kid's activities. Yeah. But there are other schools that are looking for, real diverse communities. Mm-hmm. And they do, certainly those schools are going to look at, what makes the student unique and a welcome addition to their community.
Yeah, or the college. I've also seen entrepreneurial ventures of young children or teens. One of my daughter's friends started a business with her little brother called Cell Phones for Soldiers. This was in, back where I think it was Desert Storm and all that, where she would collect cell phones and they would be refurbished and then donated. And she got a very large scholarship for, that. And so it's those little nuances and idiosyncrasies of what makes somebody unique and special and, different that a university would look at, what an amazing addition to our
community. And in those applications, again, I'm not a college advisor, but those applications, those essays, it's almost like, a sales or marketing piece for the student. It's the place where they could sell themselves and what have they done? What are they, why are they such a great fit for the university? And why is the university a great fit for them? And what can they bring to that community? Their experiences and, what they hope to get out of it.
Well, Vicki, I love this conversation. It's so needed. As a mediator and a certified divorce coach, not a day goes by that I don't work with couples and families and single parents and even the children where the financial picture is not a part of the conversation. And much of it is around the future and how am I going to be able to fill in the blank with whether it be college or work or whatever, because it affects everybody's ability to be productive. So thank you so much for your time. And what is the best way for people to learn about college financial prep and work with you, contact you, et cetera? How can they do that?
Everyone can look at on Facebook. We're at www.collegefinancialprep.com. Also have a Facebook page, facebook.com/collegefinancialprep. And to contact us, feel free. It's easy to do it from the website, collegefinancialprep.com. Just click on contact us.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And no matter where you are in your journey, everybody, whether you've got kids going to college or not, you've got to keep thriving in the chaos.
Thanks for tuning in. And make sure if you want to talk to us or ask us questions, you can always email us at thrivinginchaospodcast@gmail.com. See you next week.